Today, breaking. Dr. Anthony Fauci just so happens to be a god. An intersectional, inclusive, tolerant Massachusetts lawmaker calls for the destruction of Israel. Could this really actually possibly be the end of the road of Netanyahu's premiership in Israel? And could an audit of the Pennsylvania vote be coming this summer? All this and more on this week's edition of World News Brief. Look, it is one thing to talk about in 2012 how gain-of-function research, engaging in it, is worth the risk of a pandemic. It's one thing to be warned early on in January of 2020 that the virus is potentially man-made. It's another thing to dismiss things such as hydroxychloroquine and other prophylactics as just simply anecdotal, even though you can go to c19hcq.com and you can see lots and lots and lots of studies on that. Whole lot of science there. And it is another thing to perjure yourself before Congress about this stuff because you say you did not actually support and pay for gain-of-function research through the NIH, but you did give that money to Echo Health Alliance, who then funneled that money to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. It's one thing to do all of those things, and it's quite another thing to say this.
But I want to end with this question. You are now getting attacked. As you know, many state public health officials have quit their jobs over the last year because of the unrelenting attacks that have taken place. And now you're at the focal point. Mm. What is your level of concern that we're going to discredit public health officials to the point of, you know, look at Russia. They actually have a good vaccine and none of their citizens will take it because they don't trust their own government.
Oh, we suddenly trust Russia now. We suddenly trust Russia now. When they are, when that country is a spawn of Satan, the walking manifest, the living and breathing manifestation of Lucifer on earth. If Lucifer was going to be a geopolitical destination, according to the left, this is Chuck Todd on NBC, by the way, it's Russia. And now suddenly the people are supposed to trust the Russian government who stole the election for Donald Trump with about $80,000 of Facebook and Twitter ads in 2016? Okay, I'm sorry, back to it.
Right. It's very dangerous, Chuck, because a lot of what you're seeing as attacks on me, quite frankly, are attacks on science. Because all of the things that I have spoken about consistently from the very beginning have been fundamentally based on science.
Like your denial of hydroxychloroquine, even though there are plenty of studies throughout the years of hydroxychloroquine's safety and effectiveness. This is ludicrous, ladies and gentlemen. An attack on me is an attack on science. That, ladies and gentlemen, is you are getting into the realm of religion. You are getting into the realm of faith. Science, at least historically done, has not been a religious faith. It has been an activity done. And modern science, of course, was founded by all people of faith. Because you need an ordered universe, an ordered, predictable universe in order to even engage in science in the first place. If all we are is an accidental, sophisticated accumulation of molecules that sprang out of this primordial soup, there's no reason to think there should be things like logic or natural law, morality or scientific law. The only way that is going to exist is in the mind of an intelligent creator that creates the world out of his own intelligence and grace and goodness and the own order of his mind being transmitted from us to his creation. So, in other words, there's order to the universe, and so we can study the universe, we can hypothesize, we can study, we can record, we can test, we can experiment, and we can try to come to conclusions. But an attack on me is an attack on science, is going into the realm of what scholars call scientism. It is a faith in science. It's this new religion of science. You have these priests, which are scientists, are the priests of this scientism religion of faith. And, you know, through this, at least this segment that I watched with Chuck Todd and Fauci, you know, he makes a lot of claims. He talks about masks and stuff, but there's actually no evidence that is brought forth. He says that everything having to do with what he said about masks is all based on evidence, is changing his view and so forth. But none of that was presented. But yet we're supposed to watch this and we're supposed to simply believe it. That, ladies and gentlemen, is what you call propaganda. But essentially, an attack on me is an attack on science. It's almost like I am the embodiment of science. I am the science God. Honestly, in a bizarre way, it reminds me when Jesus said, he who has seen me has seen the Father. It's almost like if you've seen me, Dr. Anthony Fauci saying, if you've seen me, you've seen science. It is absolutely unbelievable. And look, the walls are going to continue to close in on Fauci as more and more and stuff comes out. There's a lot. I mean, there's a whole lot that I could go into. But if you want to talk about science, there's a long article at the Wall Street Journal. It's linked up at cgm.news that the science actually suggests a Wuhan lab leak, which is what he was warned about in January. Now, the guy who warned him about that backtracked and all of that. But look, did any of us at the beginning really, I mean, maybe for a little bit, we believed that it came? I did. For maybe a couple weeks, I was like, oh, there's this wet market. That's what's going on. That's what everybody's reporting. Blah, 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 blah. And then you find out, oh, in the same city as that wet market, there's the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And then eventually this year, it took a long time, we find out that there is gain of function research on bats with this with these viruses going on at that institute. And we're supposed to believe nothing to see here, that they're enhancing coronaviruses at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and there's nothing to see here. And that the bat woman, the bat lady that is doing all of this stuff is actually connected to Echo Health Alliance, who's connected, of course, to the NIH, and who, you can see, there's grants and so forth. There's, I mean, documentable proof. It's up at cgm.news that the nationalpulse.com has just done great reporting on. Documentable proof of the clear connection between the Wuhan Institute and Echo Health and the NIH. Her even saying that there has been funding from the NIH from her stuff on her resume, on this mad scientist bat lady's resume, that there's there's research from the NIH on that. Funding from the NIH on her resume. Stuff has been scrubbed and look. What's going to happen to Fauci is going to happen to Fauci. And if he's criminally liable, if he perjured himself before Congress, like it looks like he did, then that needs to be dealt with. This was the guy responsible for destroying lives, destroying businesses, destroying jobs, people being locked into their homes, churches being shuttered, unable to meet, being fined for meeting, pastors being arrested. And initially, it was supposedly because what they brought to President Trump initially, that report out of California, that the projections were that 2.4% of those who got coronavirus could die from it. That was the model. And it turned out to be an unbelievable farce. How many wives and children were abused, or potentially husbands were abused through the lockdowns? How many kids took their very lives? And we know they did as a result of the psychological trauma of these lockdowns. Family businesses that have been in for generations destroyed. Enough. I mean, he was told, he told through his emails that masks don't work, that masks are, that the regular masks you get from the store are not going to stop you from getting coronavirus, because the coronavirus is that much smaller. And then in this interview with Chuck Todd, he says, well, I just thought it changed, you know, follow the science, and that's what you do as a scientist, is what you think right now. But then as time goes on, you change it, you change your views based on the science. How would he, as the nation's leading, my question is, how does he, as the nation's leading infectious disease expert, what science changed between February and March to instruct him and tell him that now suddenly a face covering, a neck gaiter will protect you from COVID-19? What science changed between now and then? And did he not know the size of coronavirus particles? And did he not know that those masks aren't even designed for that? The masks are designed to protect against like spewing and droplets. A surgeon is in the operating room and they're leaning over a patient doing surgery and nothing from their mouth comes out and goes into the patient. That's what they're designed for. And he's going to tell us to wear 2, 3, 4, 5, 10,000 masks even after getting the experimental COVID injection? I haven't worn a mask in a while, and I'm telling you, we find various masks like in the car or, you know, in the kind of the side console of the car or something like that, and I look at that thing in disdain. I'm throwing them away as I find them. I'm done. I think we're all done with this guy. And the more time goes on, the more he's going to be exposed. And if he has been engaged in criminal activity, then he needs to be held liable. Now, look, I don't hold or harbor hatred in my heart toward him, even though I do not like him one bit, because it very much looks like he was colluding with the Chinese Communist Party. Even after Trump severed Obama in 2014, and again, I know the Trump administration had to stop some of this as well, but that in 2017, he was able to do a workaround by funding Echo Health Alliance, who was then funding and working with the Wuhan Institute of Virology on this gain-of-function research to enhance coronaviruses, whom he already said back in 2012 was worth the risk of a pandemic. Yeah, really? Yet in that interview with Chuck Todd, he's not gonna ask him about that 2012 interview. He's not gonna ask him. He didn't ask him at all about gain of function research. So that's how you
sometimes
know.
Sometimes those things were inconvenient truths.
Yeah, and there's a whole lot. There's a whole lot of inconvenient truths that Fauci is now going to have to deal with before Congress, and I guarantee you he is going to be facing legal challenges. And of course, as a Democrat operative, as he is actually using Al Gore-type language in his interview. Of course, we already know he's appeared with other Democrats at political events before. So, we know what's going on here. I'm very much looking forward to, and it's not because, again, I have something personally against Anthony Fauci. At the very beginning, I didn't have a problem with him. It seemed like he was just doing a good job, and he was trying to deal with this crazy scenario, really kind of unheard-of scenario. And then it turns out there's just more and more corruption there. But for more on everything that I talked about and even just alluded to, it's all up at cgm.news. Oh, and by the way, and welcome to this week's edition of World News Brief on the CGMRadio.com network. I am your host, Winston R. Holland. Absolutely delighted and thrilled to be with you today on this beautiful Thursday, June 10th, 2021 edition of the show. I really appreciate everybody tuning in week after week from inside the U.S. and outside as well. And speaking of inside and outside the U.S., you know, maybe it would be a good idea if some of these people, remember Senator Hirono, how notoriously during the Kavanaugh hearings and the Amy, just the incredible propaganda against Kavanaugh and the lies and the garbage that were promoted. And she came out and said that the men just need to shut up. All the men just need to shut up. Remember that? I remember that. I mean, of course, it's not bigoted. because it was someone on the left that did it toward people on the right. And if someone on the left does it, then it's not bigoted. Always remember, there's approved racism on the left. There's approved racists on the left. There's approved racist theories on the left. There's approved segregation on the left. And there's even approved, actually, anti-human rights on the left. I remember a Salon.com article that I read where the author came out and stated, look, we know that the unborn baby is alive. We just don't believe that that baby should have equal human rights. Look it up. Fact check me. Yeah. You know, it doesn't take a lot to surprise me, but that kind of surprised me that they were willing to admit that. So remember, there's approved all of that on the left, things that you can get away with because it's on the left directed toward the right. So when I saw this, well, I'm going to get to that in a second, but I'm bringing this story up because of something that happened on Gab the other day. So we are CGM Radio. We're at CGM Radio News on Facebook, Parler, Gab, Twitter, and Instagram. It's at cgmradio.news. I've been trying to get that fixed, but Instagram's being stubborn about that for some reason. Nobody else has at CGM Radio News. But that is besides the point. But I'm on Gab, and I really have liked Andrew Torba, the founder of Gab. He's actually has been a fantastic kind of antithesis to Jack Dorsey of Twitter. I mean, he's just real. It's rare that I see something that he posts that I do not agree with. But when I saw this the other day, when I was posting on Gab, and this came through, or Andrew Torba actually retweeted this. And here's what, this was 4 days ago. Let me bring this up a bit more. Here we go. He retweeted something from Wyatt, which is at MonkeyGagReflex, interesting handle. And they said this, if you could name the worst traders in history of all the countries with the most incredible effects globally, it would be the Rosenbergs. These Jewish immigrants came to this country fleeing Russia and then decided to become communists and join the Young Communist League USA. They infiltrated the military and ended up stealing the atomic bomb and giving it to the Soviets, basically beginning the Cold War and putting humanity on the edge of annihilation for like 40 plus years. Real pieces of bleep. So, you know, one thing you've got to understand, we have to understand, is that within conservatism, within there's a subset on the right that is not only anti-Israel, but it is truly anti-Semitic. I've experienced it personally. I remember a few years ago sitting down having a conversation with a man. My daughter was in dance class, and there were some parents that were there hanging out until the dance class was over. I began to have a conversation with one of the parents, and we were agreeing with everything. This guy was really, really smart talking about politics. He knew a lot about a lot. He had his facts, and we just had a great time of discussion. And I mean, I even remember thinking to myself, oh my gosh, wonder if I should ask this guy to be like a host on my network. I mean, he was that good. I mean, that solid and knowledgeable. And then we got to the topic of Israel. And he began to say things really delegitimizing the state of Israel. And I was really taken aback. I didn't know what to say at first, which is probably kind of ironic, and from somebody, a podcast host that talks about this kind of stuff very regularly. But I was really taken aback and surprised. We were in lockstep on everything. Of course he's going to be pro-Israel. That's part of the MAGA agenda. He loves Trump. He loves the so-called return of Christendom that we're seeing happening, these European countries waking up to how terrible secularism is and how terrible political Islam is, and they're fighting back against that. But then when it comes to Israel, and so I don't remember exactly, once I kind of got my wits about me, I don't remember exactly what I said, but essentially I pushed back a little bit and I said, well, you know, I do think the Jews should be able to have a place where they can live peacefully just like other nations can. What was amazing was how quick he backed off. Very quickly, this gentleman that was very knowledgeable on so many issues, he had no idea how to respond to me. Just a very clear, plain, simple argument on my part. He backed off and he was like, oh, yeah, yeah, well, okay. And da, 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 da. And then eventually the subject was changed. But it reminded me that on the right, there is this strain of anti-Semitism. And if we ignore it, we ignore it to our own peril and potentially to the peril of those who call themselves Jews. Look, if we can't learn from the 20th century of the dangers of anti-Semitism, we cannot learn anything. If we're that stupid and that ignorant to not see anti-Semitism for what it is and the potential for destruction that it has, then we are fools. Reminds me of that scripture in Romans 1 where it says, professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of man and birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures. And I mean, all types of debauchery came from that. We think we are so wise, and you can have 180,000 IQ, but you can still have hatred in your heart for a particular people just because they are that particular people. Now, I may have overreacted on this post from Andrew Torba, but I've seen this kind of stuff before, that these Jewish immigrants came to this country fleeing Russia and then decided to become communists and join the Young Communist League USA. Before we get to my response, what I said here, to what you can ask somebody, the Jews did this, and the Jews own all of the media, and the Rosenbergs, and who's the Balfour Declaration? The Rothschilds, right? The Rothschilds. They're rich and they're greedy and they're such a small group, but they have so much power. And so, okay. So what? What is your implication? And that's what they don't like to talk about. They don't like to talk about what is the implication from the Jews on the media. Let's say all of that is true. All that anti-Jewish conspiracy theory is true. Okay. What are you saying by it? What? Help me out. What's the implication? They don't want to say what the implication is, because the implication is that there is something inherently wrong with the Jews more than any other group of people. And I think very few of them will actually come out and admit that. They'll slander the Jews. They'll say all kinds of conspiracy theories about the Jews. And that's really what they mean and what is very strongly implied by all that, but they won't actually come out against them. So here's what I responded on at CGM Radio News on Gab. I said, quote, why conservative Christians like at A enjoy fanning the flames of Jew hatred is beyond me. There are many nefarious actors in this world, and people of religious or ethnic Jewish descent are just one of many groups of them. Plus, garbage like this simply gives the left more ammo to bash the MAGA movement and Christians as racists. And they're most certainly watching his posts. We should be better than this. But sadly, anti-Semitism seems to extend its tentacles in every area of politics, even on the quote right. What do we expect to gain from posts like this? How are posts like this helping anything? They're not. They just come from a Jew hatred as old as Judah himself. Sorry, not sorry, but Jesus, the apostles, and the first many thousands of Christians were all Jews. And by the way, they didn't even start using the term Christians until Acts 11. And we have the four Gospels in the first 10 chapters of Acts, in the first 25 verses of chapter 11, before the term Christian even comes into the lexicon. If you hate Jews, then you hate the Son of God and his followers. And you can very easily prove this to them. Just simply go to the beginning of the book of Matthew, or the beginning of the book of Luke, and show them the genealogy of Jesus going all the way back up to Judah. It's very easy to prove this. You believe the New Testament? Jesus was a son from the tribe of Judah. and you can show them the genealogy right there. Jesus was not a Caucasian. Jesus was not a black guy. He was a Jew. Love it or hate it. That's how it is. And honestly, I believe Jesus is still a Jew. And the reason why I say that is because Jesus was raised bodily. And I believe that he, as well as all of us, are going to have the same DNA in heaven as we have here on earth. When our bodies are reunited with our spirits at the end of times, it's our physical bodies. So I don't think it's out of the question to even say he is still a Jew. So you got to be very, very careful with this. And this started, a long chain. This was 4 days ago when this all started. And then there's literally been hundreds and hundreds of comments based off of that one thing that I thread. Now people are debating Protestantism and Catholicism, and it's not even on, I think most of it isn't even on the topic of what we were talking about. But here's how he responded. He said, "What I expect to gain back is some honesty. Many modern Christians have stopped caring about Christ. What's in the Gospels, what he said about the Pharisees, men with the same religion as the Jews, and salvation means nothing. It is never more display than a post like this, where intelligent writing goes to worries about anti-Semitism, racism, and what the world thinks of us. We were only promised a cross and a rock. There's not one word about racism or anti-Semitism in the New Testament. Indeed, both are Marxist ideas, new to the 20th century. There are eras where the world will pull their skirts away from Christians regardless. The Western world has come to create a full idol out of Jews and minorities and social status. We soaked in idolatry, and that unfortunately includes conservative Christians like at CGM Radio News who value the world's opinions over Christ." Oh, wow. Strong words. Strong words. Put a challenge toward me. And let me be clear, I usually do not get into these back and forth exchanges on Twitter. I really try to avoid them, but for the most part, they're pointless. But yeah, sometimes you just can't let it go. It's just hard to let it go. So here's how I responded. I said, "This has nothing to do with pleasing the world or the left. Just look at our news aggregator and podcast network for proof of that. And everything to do with love for our neighbor and not putting unnecessary stumbling blocks in the way of those who were trying to win. A very biblical idea we get from the Apostle Paul, a Jew. One of our very own hosts is a pro-America first anti-globalist messianic Jew, and posts like this imply something genetically amiss with Jews as a group and would therefore lump him in by default with horrible globalist actors. Posts like this imply there is something specifically wrong with Jews over other groups and thus fall into anti-Semitism. Even us on the right must admit that there's still hatred of the Jews and even other forms of racism these days, especially against whites, out there and stand against it." And then he says this. This is funny. I thought this was pretty rich. He says, "At CGM Radio News, have you asked yourself why your very own messianic Jew won't call himself a Christian?" Of course, we're talking about Bob Siegel, and we get into the details here. "If he was merely human rather than an idol to be proud of..." So now, apparently, I worship Bob Siegel. Bob, if you're listening, do this. Surprise, surprise. I'm a much bigger fan of yours than you realize. "If he was merely a human rather than an idol to be proud of, you might have. Messianic Jews, for the most part, believe Jesus, the Jew, saved them a Jewish person, and Paul was the best Jew person to have ever walked the earth to save the Messiah. That esteem does not extend at all to listening to Paul, where he states clearly, there is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus," which is, I believe, Galatians 3:28, where he just rips that verse out of its context. Not only the whole New Testament, but Galatians itself. "Christians can state the Apostles' Creed without wincing, and they don't mind being called Christians. Jews in sincere conversion are called to do what Paul did and throw away their Jewish identity fully for Christ while loving his nation fully by wanting them to convert to Christ. Worries about anti-Semitism only lead away from Christ. Calling yourself a Jew first is to not put Christ first." I mean, there's so much in there. I'm going to share this response and then be done with this. But I said, He does call himself a Christian. Just look at his bio. And of course, cgmradio.com/Bob. And this is what it says on his bio. Quote, this program will not shy away from either. As a Christian apologist, Bob loves fielding questions about the accuracy of the Bible, the historicity of the resurrection, the clear evidence for the existence of God, and alleged Bible contradictions. His email is bob@cgmradio.com if you'd like to ask him directly if he calls himself a Christian or not. Just because I didn't use the term Christian in my response does not mean that he does not call himself one. He does, and I do as well. Bob Siegel is a Christian. He is your ally, not your enemy. He proclaims and defends the good news of Jesus Christ to both Jew and Gentile and loves them all the same. There are a lot of wonderful Jews out there, including Bob, that love you and want Jesus' absolute best for your life. I hope that clarifies things. And then we go more and more and on and on. Look, there is, as I said, there is a strain of anti-Semitism here. And it shows up frequently, these kind of anti-Semitic jibes and jabs, just kind of saying there's something wrong. So, take that for what it is worth, but I hope we can learn from it. I think there was one more thing on here that I... Oh, yeah. This idea, there's neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female. You are all one in Christ Jesus. What I would like to, and I didn't go into it on this response, and he wouldn't care anyway. I have a question to ask you. Do women exist? Do women exist? Are there women? Are we supposed to throw off? There's neither man or woman. So that means there's no women. That means there's no men. Are there slaves in this world right now? Have there ever been slaves in the past 2,000 years since Paul wrote this? Are there sex slaves today? Are the human traffickers today exploiting our open border policy that actually Kamala Harris just said, don't come, which apparently saying, don't come, you're a Nazi, but I guess Kamala Harris can say that and not be called a Nazi because, again, there's approved Nazis. If you're a Nazi on the left, you're approved. You're an approved, okay Nazi. Which I don't think she's a Nazi for saying that. I'm just taking their logic, what they say. But I'm sorry. I remember one guy talking about this who was asked about this very topic. And he said, you know, when I go home tonight, I'm really, really glad I'm going to be sleeping next to a woman. I'm sorry. There are still Jews and Gentiles. That famous passage in Romans 2 where Paul says he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, but one inwardly. Like two verses later in Romans chapter 3, verse 1, Paul says, okay, then what advantage has the Jew? What is the benefit of circumcision? Look at Romans 9 through 11. He calls them Jews over and over and over and over again. There is still a very clear non-Christian reference to Jews in the New Covenant. And to take this verse out of context like that and to say anything otherwise is absolutely, it's ludicrous. What's going on here, and look, I'm not a Bible teacher. I'm just a rational human being that's reading something and that is attempting to just kind of use logic and use the context to come to a conclusion. I think most things in the Bible you can understand without somebody teaching it to you, simply by reading about it, thinking about it, and asking yourself who, what, when, where, why, how, and praying about it, asking for illumination from the Holy Spirit, and coming to a conclusion. Most things are not ununderstandable. This is one of those. Obviously, there's a spiritual, this idea of the Jew spiritually that Paul is talking about in Romans 2:28, where he says he's not a Jew who is one outwardly, but who is one inwardly, is referring to a true follower of God, which in the New Covenant is defined as a disciple of Jesus Christ. That's what he's talking. It's an analogy. It's imagery. He wasn't saying that Jews no longer exist. It is ludicrous if you're willing to open your eyes and actually read the rest of the New Testament. Again, Romans chapter 3, verse 1, Romans 9 through 11. I mean, they're referred to as Jews all over the New Testament. So there was this Massachusetts lawmaker. Some of these people, oh yeah, what I said earlier about Senator Hirono, how some men need to shut up, she might not have been entirely incorrect about that. Now, listen, what she said was totally anti-male, demonic garbage, and I can't stand her. But I just couldn't help but think of her when I saw this. As I said in the teaser intro, this intersectional, tolerant, inclusive leftist Massachusetts lawmaker calls to destroy Israel and condones Hamas. This is from Israel365News.com. A Massachusetts state senator is under fire for comments he made legitimizing Hamas, a Palestinian terrorist organization, as well as a call to replace Israel with a binational state. Woohoo! In a statement posted on his website on May 28, State Senator Jamie Eldridge, a Democrat who serves the Middlesex and Worcester District, commented on the recent 11-day conflict between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, urging, quote, much-needed dialogue around this very serious and consequential conflict. Quote, against the backdrop of hundreds of human lives lost over the course of this long-standing conflict, I hope more people can engage in this dialogue with an acknowledgement of the massive power differential between the Israeli government and Hamas in what is left of the Palestinian territories. I'll address that in a second. He went on to say that he, quote, fully opposes the Israeli occupation, end quote, and that if a two-state solution cannot be found, then it, quote, may be time to embrace the establishment of a single democratic country, including the lands of Israel and Palestine. Again, do you know there's never actually been a country of Palestine? There's been a region called Palestine that the Romans named in about 133 AD, named it Palestine to kind of rub it in the nose of the conquered Jews. But there's never been a country of Palestine. There's been a region that Westerners have called Palestine and Easterners have called Palestine. There's never actually been a country of Palestine. Fact check me on that. Promise you, never been there. He went on to say, let's see here. I hope more people can engage in this dialogue. You know, they try to sound so benign and tolerant, and we just want to have a conversation. We just, you know, with the acknowledgement of the massive power differential between the Israeli government and Hamas in what is left of the Palestinian territories. Yeah? The massive power differential? What about the massive differential of attacks by one group over another on their unarmed civilian population? What about over 4,000 rockets being fired over the skies of Israel indiscriminately at men, women, children, Christians, Muslims, Jews, Druze, Arabs, whoever, and everybody that's in there, young, old? What about that differential? Because might doesn't make wrong, and less might doesn't make right. And that's essentially the morality that he's engaging here, where you literally have one country leaving another region of that country alone, and that small region of that country, because Gaza is technically part of Israel still, even though they've withdrawn from it, which was a huge mistake. That's why Gaza is the perfect example. If you know why I'm against a two-state solution, why I'm against land for peace, Gaza is the perfect example. Notwithstanding the fact that the Palestinian Authority, who rules the what they call the West Bank, but who the Jews called Judea and Samaria, notwithstanding the fact that their president is head of the terrorist group, the Palestinian Liberation Organization. I mean, that known for like skyjacking and taking hostages in the 60s and 70s. I mean, it's you almost can't even believe it. If you let it, it'll make your head explode. Oh, who also happened to, again, you know, pay. If you kill Jews, you get a pension for life from the Palestinian Authority. I mean, it's unreal. But what about that massive power? What about that massive, the massive difference between those who fire rockets at innocent civilians and the Israeli government, who is extremely careful to only attack militant targets in response, sadly, there is collateral damage because they actually will fire their rockets from hospitals, from neighborhoods, schools, because they want casualties, because the left-wing evil press will then take those casualties and use it to beat Israel. The left-wing press, largely, I think, is in cahoots with Hamas, with terrorist groups like Hamas, because, as we've been discussing, they hate Israel. And, of course, this should remind us of one of our very favorite, maybe my favorite congresswoman. I don't know, congressman. Can I even say congresswoman? Is that evil? I think that's evil. I'm really sorry. I'm going to get on my, I'm going to find a congresswoman. I'm going to bow down before her, and I'm going to apologize for calling her a congresswoman because that's gender stereotyping, and we should all be gender nonconforming and not go with the evil white male Western patriarchy slave owning that has destroyed our civilization if I call her a congresswoman. Okay, my favorite congresswoman of all time, Ilhan Omar, ripped for equating the United States to the Taliban, Hamas. Now, this is what she said on her Twitter, okay? In the midst of I'm sorry, this was June 7th. So this was after the 11-day war. This was after the fighting had ceased. She said, we must have the same level of accountability and justice for all victims of crimes against humanity. We have seen unthinkable atrocities committed by the U.S., Hamas, Israel, Afghanistan, and the Taliban. I have asked at Sec Blinken where people are supposed to go for justice. Ladies and gentlemen, she just equated the United States of America and Israel with Hamas, Afghanistan, the Taliban. But this is that stream of anti-Semitism. Now, we are very blessed that we do not have, that I'm aware of, that we do not have any congresspersons or senators on the right that have that speak about or have strains of anti-Semitism in them. But there is the growing wing of the left, the Democrat Party, the Hamas wing of the Democrat Party, the Jihad Squad, that they're blatant about this. And what they're trying to do, again, in a Marxist takeover of a country, what do you have to do? You have to delegitimize that country, get the people to hate the country, and then they will be open so much more to being able to receive your dictatorial leadership. I mean, it's pretty basic. It's pretty simple. It's you propagandize the people, you treat them as children, and then you take over. So look, there is a it's something we have to be on guard against on the right, right? There are people in these groups that I even had one guy respond to something I put, not in response to this thread, but I actually retweeted that or regabbed it rather. And did a status, and then someone commented. He commented, and he said, "I'm only racist against the Jews." He's like, "Look, I'm fine, but I'm only racist against the Jews." And I'm like, I actually responded to that guy. You can see it at CGM Radio News if you go to the feed there. I actually responded to that guy, and I tried to treat him a little gentler because I think I really think he was like, "I'm fine, like I'm not doing anything wrong." And if you read his response, you'll kind of see more so the context, but he really thought he was okay, and he wasn't really trying to be a bad guy. So I tried to treat him a little gentler, and but still pointed out, hey, you said in your response, I'm only racist toward the Jews. Come on, man. As I've said before on this broadcast, we've essentially been following the 2019 Israeli election has not ended, essentially, since I started this podcast. I started it in January 2019, and I believe the first election was in March, and it was inconclusive. And I think at the time, what was unprecedented was that an Israeli election had never actually not been resolved. They've never actually gone to a full second election. And then they went to a second, and that second election became unresolved. Then a third, and now a fourth. And if this doesn't get resolved, they would go to a fifth. I mean, it's really remarkable. However, it does look more and more like that election is going to get resolved. But let me give you guys a bit of a rundown, kind of how we got to this point. This is Reuters. Let's see. Yeah, Reuters. March 23rd, 2021, Israel holds its fourth inconclusive election in 2 years. As in every previous vote, no party won a majority in the 120-seat parliament. Netanyahu's right-wing Likud emerges as the biggest party. Lapid centrist Yesh Atid, there is a future, comes second. Bennett's Yamina, rightwards party, wins just 7 seats, but he emerges as kingmaker. And again, the reason why it's all about the coalition of parties. Netanyahu could get literally 60 seats in the Knesset, or 59 seats in the Knesset. But if no other parties join with him, he cannot then form a government. So you have to, there's many political parties. We have a lot of political parties here, but they get next to nothing of the votes. So they're really inconsequential, except in some rare situations when you have like a Ross Perot come in, like in the 92 election that gave Bill Clinton the election. But here you got a lot of very viable parties, guys that might get 5 seats in the Knesset, 7 seats in the Knesset. So you got to get to 61 seats in order to be able to form a what they call governing coalition. And in Israel, you do not vote for the prime minister, you vote for the party. And then that party will join with other parties, form a coalition. They'll elect the prime minister, and they'll elect all the other positions. So it's a very different, voting for the party is like everything there. So, okay, so that happens March 23rd. There's an inconclusive election. April 5th, Netanyahu's corruption trial resumes on charges he denies. April 6th, President Reuven Rivlin gives Netanyahu 28 days to form a new government. So Netanyahu got first dibs on this. And by the way, the president of Israel is a largely ceremonial position. He serves 1 7-year term. And actually, President Reuven Rivlin's position is going to be up, I believe, in July, actually. So he's almost done with his term. And it is the Knesset. The people don't actually elect the president. It's the Knesset there, Congress, that elects the president. But the president does have power, and that the president will look at the results of the election and he will try to figure out, okay, who is the person with the best chance of being able to form a government? Reuven Rivlin ostensibly thought that about Netanyahu. So Netanyahu was given that task. And his task, because he won like, I think, 24 seats or something like that, his task was to get as many parties as he could together to form a coalition so that he could get to at least 61 seats. That did not happen. He woos smaller right-wing parties and religious parties, including Yamina, but fails. May 5th, Rivlin turns to Lapid, who tries to form a, quote, government of change. I remember Lapid, he's a centrist. His party is Yesh Atid, which means there is a future. Rivlin turns to Lapid, who tries to form a government of change from an unlikely coalition of right-wing, centrist, leftist, and Arab parties that would unseat Netanyahu. May 10th, fighting erupts between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, and unrest breaks out in many mixed Jewish-Arab cities in Israel. Coalition talks break down. So you have the 11 days of fighting. On May 21st, ceasefire declared. Coalition talks resume. May 30th, Bennett announces he is joining forces with Lapid to form a unity government. June 2nd, about 30 minutes before his midnight deadline, Lapid informs Rivlin he has managed to strike deals with his political allies to form a coalition government. Bennett will serve as prime minister for about 2 years, after which Lapid will take over. Now, interestingly, what it doesn't mention in this timeline is something very, very, very historic happened on June 2nd. Something that many Israelis are very concerned about. Included in Lapid's coalition is Arab parties. Is that, I believe, one Arab party or a coalition of Arab parties? That hasn't happened before in Israel. Arab parties have never actually been part of a governing coalition. And if you hear what some of these Arab lawmakers say about Israel, you would think it was the Jihad Squad or Hamas talking about Israel, which it has nothing to do with their Arabness and everything to do with what they say. June 3rd, Netanyahu scorns the alliance as a dangerous left-wing government and later calls on Yamina members to jump ship and vote against it. June 8th, Knesset Speaker Yariv Levin, a Netanyahu loyalist, says the government will be put up for a vote on June 13th. All right, and so on June 13th, the Knesset is due to hold a vote on the Lapid-Bennett government. If it wins the special ballot, Israel's new government will be sworn in that day, ending 12 years of Netanyahu's premiership. If the proposed cabinet fails to win the Knesset's confidence, Israel will be heading to another election. So June 13th is do or die. If they get this done, or they go to another election. That's 3 days away as of this recording. It looks like it will happen, but really, I mean, how much do we know about what's going on over there? Even if you live in Israel, how much do you know about what's going on in the smoke-filled back rooms? We just do not know. So this is, you know, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Pray for the Jews. Pray for the Arabs. Pray for everybody there. Pray that God's kingdom comes to Israel. Israel is a small nation, but it's very influential, and it's very important that there is a strong Israel so that they can act as a hedge against the power of Iran and its proxies in Lebanon and Gaza and elsewhere. So that's extremely important. So we will definitely have an update on World News Brief next week on the results of that. I guarantee you that. You know, you never know what kind of news is going to pop up. I still have up on my screen that Gab thread that I was reading to you guys, and I see this Fox News: retired nun to plead guilty to embezzling huge amounts of money for gambling habit. Retired nun to plead guilty to embezzling huge amounts of money for gambling habit, and it looks like she embezzled $835,000. Hey, look, we all have our weaknesses. Pennsylvania Senator Mastriano says state could have 2020 election audit by July. This is from the Epic Times, who I consider the paper of record for the American people, not the New York Times. Republican Senator Doug Mastriano said Tuesday that he believes Pennsylvania could have an audit of the 2020 presidential election by July if the proposal receives appropriate backing. Now, remember, there's an election audit in Arizona that has been going on for weeks now. And here's what he said about the Pennsylvania audit, because he just got back from that. He said they have microscopes and lights. A camera takes a picture at an angle so you can see if the spots that are filled in were by human or machine. Should an audit happen in Pennsylvania, the Arizona model is the one, is what he said about that. They're going to be able to tell if those ballots have folds in them. And if they don't have folds in them, then they are a fraudulent ballot. And guys, that audit is almost done. I heard that they got like 3 pallets left as of June 10th. It could be a political... I don't know. I don't know ultimately what to expect, but it could be a political earthquake. I honestly don't think they would go through an audit like that then to just come out of that audit with mud on their face. I don't think they would go through an audit like that unless they were like 100% certain that they would be able to come back and say, yes, there was fraud, so much fraud that it changed the election outcome. And then at that point, maybe you do have a path to the Supreme Court. Mike Lindell has his own path to the Supreme Court through the machines. But you can prove election fraud the old-fashioned way. So here's what he said. So you had Vernon Jones go down to Georgia yesterday, and I believe it was yesterday on Wednesday, toured the facility and came back and just said it was absolutely dynamite. You've got what you have in Arizona is you have a model. They've created a model. They've created a system. These guys are literally called the cyber ninjas that are performing this audit. They invited Dominion there. They've got, it's an open, transparent, there's cameras everywhere, live streaming, the whole thing. I mean, it's about as transparent as you could possibly get. And they've created a model that other states can then take and adopt. Boom, boom, Georgia, boom, Pennsylvania, boom, Michigan, boom, Wisconsin, boom. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? Okay, so, hey, look, if this is the cleanest election in history, when just before that, you had Kamala Harris, you had Amy Klobuchar, you had other Democrats talking about being concerned about how easily hackable that these machines are. You had the CNN stories and the New York Times stories about election fraud and being able to hack machines, videos on that. You have videos of experts testifying before Congress, one of them saying how easy his freshman class could hack these voting machines. And you had Chris Krebs, who used to work for the Trump administration before he was fired, who admitted that those machines are connected to the internet, can connect to the internet. And then, of course, you have Mike Lindell's absolute proof, absolute interference, absolutely 9-0 documentary. By the way, if you have not watched Absolutely 9-0, go to frankspeech.com. Watch it. It's 25 minutes long. I promise you, it is worth your time. When you see, dude, there are these things called capture packets. It's like these balls of data, that were transmitting over election night. They call them CPACs. Capture packets, or I'm sorry, PCAPs, packet captures. And within these data, these like balls of data that are transmitting through cyberspace on the night of November 3rd, if you can capture those packets of data, you can see where the attack originated from, the city, the country, the IP address. And not only that, but where it was going. And not only that, but how many votes were flipped from Biden to Trump. They took 20 of these packet captures and showed in five states, the five swing states except for Nevada, that Trump handily won those elections. And that all of this data, this IT forensic data is actually captured, and they have it. They have proof. Lindell has hired teams of these IT experts. And that's why he says when this gets to the Supreme Court, it's going to be 9-0 that this election was stolen. You don't even have to look at the mail-in ballots. You don't have to look at the paper, the canvas, or any of that. All you got to do is, boom, here you go. That alone will overturn the results of the election. And as I said last week, if Arizona falls, there will be a domino effect like you will not believe. The pressure on Brian Kemp in Georgia will be insurmountable. He already got booed at the Georgia Republican convention this past weekend. He got booed. It was terrible. And Vernon Jones got up there and he just lit up the stage. The pressure on Brian Kemp, now that's coming from Vernon Jones, who is just magnificent. He's absolutely magnificent. Who I hope is the next governor of Georgia, I hope he wins the election next year, and I think he's got a really good chance of it if the election is fair. I think there's no question he'll win if the election is actually a fair election. We could see some really interesting stuff. So Pennsylvania has come down to Arizona, and this is what he said. He said, quote, if we had the support with the majority of the members in any committee we do this from, and the body itself, the Senate, probably July, we could see it, referring to an audit of the 2020 election. So you've had, and my understanding is there's representatives not just from Georgia and Pennsylvania, but from other states as well, that have gone down there to view and watch this audit. The mainstream media is kind of going a little crazy about it. But this is extremely important. What happened the night of November 3rd and the morning of November 4th is critical. Because if we do not fix that, then we are going places as a nation that can get pretty dark. And I don't want to alarm anybody, and I'm not trying to alarm anybody, and there's no reason to fear. I do not fear. I do not walk in fear of this. But if we do not get the election fraud fixed and handled and taken care of, and I understand there's always going to be cheaters, and that's something we're always going to have to deal with. But election fraud on such a scale that you can steal a presidential election. Now, you also have to remember, you don't to steal a presidential election, you don't have to steal the election in every county. As Patrick Byrne talks about, there are six, you only have to do it in six counties. You have to do it in Fulton County in Georgia. You have to do it in Maricopa County in Arizona. You have to do it in the main counties. I don't have all the counties memorized, but the county in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, Nevada, those main counties, deep, deep, deep blue counties, you only have to do it in six counties to steal an election with in a country with about 2,000 counties. So that's why they stopped the counting on election night, kicked the poll watchers out, boarded up the windows, and they got to town. They went to town. There's footage of Ruby Freeman just taking ballots, running them through, taking ballots, running them through again, taking down in Georgia, taking ballots, running them through again. I'm telling you, the devil did go down to Georgia. But it looks like it could be a phoenix is arising out of Arizona, out of nothing, from nothing to something. And we could see. We could see a political earthquake. I think it's going to be a long, hot summer. Guys, enjoy the show, okay? Enjoy the show because things are going to get really interesting. People in the mainstream media are already melting. Videos I've seen, they are melting about this. They are terrified. They are terrified of the audit in Arizona. They are terrified. They're not calling for openness, transparency. They're not, we're not worried about, hey, do an audit. That's fine. As long as there can be Democrats there and our people there, sure, fine. We won this election. This is the cleanest election in history. That's not what they're saying. They're melting because they know that their time is potentially short, that the ruse of the November 2020 election, America's chickens are coming home to roost, to quote Barack Obama's pastor, prayer of our nation. Enjoy the show, and because we're going to see some, I believe we're going to see some very interesting things ahead. All right, folks, that'll do it for this week's edition of World News Brief. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember, you can email me, world@cgmradio.com. Please subscribe if you haven't already, cgmradio.com/world, or just type in World News Brief, CGM, in your favorite podcasting app, and while you're there, please leave me a 5-star review. I would be most obliged. And of course, check out cgm.news for all of the stories mentioned on this show and more, including the latest breaking news. God bless. We'll see you next time, and may his kingdom come and his will be done on earth as it is in heaven.